We welcome you to another episode of Hold My Cutter, coming your way from Burn by Rocky Patel here on the north side, just a couple of blocks away from PNC Park. Our guest is Joe Block, longtime broadcaster of all kinds of sports, but now 9 years with the Pittsburgh Pirates radio and television. And we always ask our guests to bring along a particular Rocky smoke that they like, and he selected the number six. That's our featured smoke this episode. It's got the Honduran wrapper with the Honduran binder. It's a Honduran and Nicaraguan blend for filler. Gives you notes of vanilla and cocoa with hints of black pepper with spicy and nutty finishes. I know that's particularly something that you're fond of.
Yeah, the nuttiness.
It's very a bit nutty.
It's a bit nutty.
I figured that would be appropriate for me being here.
Of course. Yeah, very, very appropriate. We've actually talked to Joe about his journey. It's just a fascinating episode that we had the first time, but now we want to pick up kind of where we left off, because we've talked to Joe about his minor league days and all the number of cities that he had, the number of license plates on his wall at home. We talked about getting the Dodgers gig, where you're doing some pre-game and post-game work with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and you find out shortly after you're married, is that right? That
I proposed to my wife.
You proposed to your wife.
In a Pittsburgher, which is crazy.
Right. Yeah.
Full circle.
Yeah. And 3 days later, get a call out of the clear blue sky that the LA Dodgers want me to come.
And what time of year was this?
This is late January, I think it was early February. Oh, wait, no. When did I get engaged? No, late January, yeah.
Okay. So now you're out of that gig.
Yeah, so I said to the New Orleans Hornets at the time, I said, can I just quit in the middle of the season? I said, can you give us to the All-Star break, which was, I think, February 11th, 12th? Sure. And so, yeah, packed up and moved away. And she was living back here in Pittsburgh. She had moved back home. She was homesick and wanted to be back. So so now we're engaged. We're living on two separate coasts, and we're going to get married back here in Pittsburgh and then move out to L.A. So what could go wrong?
And what could go wrong?
Well, as soon as we get back from our honeymoon, within a week's time, it turns out that the Dodgers had different ideas. They switched stations.
What year is this, Joe, by the way?
It was after the 2011 season.
Okay.
So we got married at Old St. Luke's Church in Scott Township, and then drove all the way out, me and her, in her little Jeep Cherokee, and moved on out to L.A., and we had to basically figure out what we're going to do after that.
How much fun was it doing the Dodge? Did you like that gig?
Oh, sure. Now, you know, you talk about the Dodgers. Oh, man.
Yeah.
You must have gotten sick of all that winning.
Oh, my God.
How many?
Winning. Sick of winning.
How many hundreds of games did they win that year out there? Well, no, they were barely over 500, which still isn't bad. It was like their worst attendance, I think, ever in L.A. They had like 20,000 fans, 25,000 fans.
Only 2.5 million. Yeah.
Well, for L.A.
I know.
And then that was when the owner, Frank McCourt, was going through the messy divorce. And so hosting the call-in show, half the time they wanted to talk about the divorce and how come he's not spending a lot of money.
How'd you handle that? Because you talked previously with us about you didn't think you were a great talk show host before, and now you're doing Dodger games, pre and post game. How'd you handle this stuff?
I like doing the pre and post a lot more, because I thought I was doing it more as an anchor.
Okay.
And not that I've envisioned myself to be some anchor, but I guess that's probably more my personality on air would be, all right, let's set this element up. Let's move to this. Let's go to this. Let's bring up this idea or point or concept, and then let's flush it out, rather than just trying to be shocking and come up, you know. And what's funny now, the older I've gotten, and you know, that 9-run comeback game or whatever, I'm just losing my mind, because you know, it's just fun. So I've actually kind of moved away from that. The older I've gotten, so I don't know. You're more of a fan
now. You're out of the Dodgers.
Yeah.
How'd you get the Brewers?
Yeah. So I just got married. Just moved my wife 3,000 miles away from her hometown in Pittsburgh. And
welcome to baseball.
Yeah. But I mean, for no job.
Yeah. No job even.
So it wasn't like I'm some hot commodity free agent, you know, or something like that. I had never called Major League Baseball games full time for money, you know. And it's, so I need my first job. I need to break in to the major leagues. And I had had some interest from the Brewers before.
And you're applying every year to different places.
Yeah. So I'd known, we talked in the last episode, you can just click this link to.
That's right. You can replay it.
Nice plug. Nice plug.
I don't know. But when I was in Detroit growing up, I got to intern a little bit at Tiger Stadium for WJR, and that was the flagship station at that time. And the PR guy was named Tyler Barnes, and Tyler Barnes still is, and at that time was vice president of communications with the Brewers. And we'd stay in touch a little bit, and he invited me to come out and interview for a play-by-play job with Bob Uecker. And I said yes. And so part of the deal was, you know, you go there and you, typical stuff, you interview and with all the higher ups, the team president and some of the VPs, including Tyler. And, you know, it seemed to go well enough that they said, well, hey, you know, you kind of know what this means. Would you like to have dinner with Bob Uecker? He's going to be your partner if you got this job. Would you? Yeah. But now, Uke lives in Arizona in the off season and in spring training. You know, so they flew me from LA to Arizona and to have dinner at the old Don and Charlie's. Did you ever go to Don?
No.
Oh, you got to go to Don and Charlie's.
No. Well, it's gone now.
It's gone.
Oh, yeah, man. Don Carson. They closed it down, and then someone robbed them with all the, you know, all the paraphernalia.
Oh my goodness!
It was this great place in Scottsdale.
Jeez. That's terrible.
Wall to wall stuff from the primarily the 70s and 80s, a little bit of 90s. All the people that have been in there, all the sports figures,
oh,
and so we sit down and. You know, he's got a seat there. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, Bob Uecker. And I used to watch Mr. Belvedere in WrestleMania. this is great, you know. And it was so cool. And Fergie Jenkins came over and bought us a beer.
Oh my.
You know, it was one of those places where just, you know,
you never knew who you were going to run into.
Oh,
yeah,
you
it was
know.
A place.
It was just cool. It was so cool. So, And that was my first experience at it, you know, at Don and Charlie's. And so it was just like, wait a minute, I'm sitting at a table with Bob Uecker. Fergie Jenkins just came over and bought us a round of beers. You know, what? Bud Selig came in. He would like wave hi. You know, he goes, "Hey, Al." You know, he called him Al. You know, just like because he lives in the same neighborhood. You know, it's just like, this is blowing my mind. So all the things that we talked about in the previous episode, all the things that, you know, I had some cool experiences. This was like, wait a second, what is going on? This was another, you know, league beyond. I couldn't believe what was happening, but I kept telling myself, wait a minute, you don't have the job, you know, but this has got to be the precursor to it. But so,
I mean, in order to not get the job at that point, that means, hey, you want to sit down and talk to the guy we're going to hire? Yeah.
Yeah.
You would have to be
a complete
jerk. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, this guy's terrible. Get him out of here. You know?
Yeah.
So he says to Fergie's leaving, you know, he comes, like, I know Fergie Jenkins. Yeah, Fergie.
Yeah. So,
Fergie, we go way back.
Yeah.
Right after Al. Well,
30, Selig. 31 yeah. and I were yeah. talking for a little bit. And, but he goes, you know, because he just like sent a round over from his table. So then he comes over, say, you know, he's taking off. He says goodbye to you. And he goes, hey, Ferg, you know, hey, meet my new partner, Joe Block, you know.
Oh, wow.
What did you do in that? Did your heart just drop?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I turned just completely pale. So nothing, he didn't know anything was going on, which was great. So that was, because that was the same color. You can see that. That's
there's
the
that
joke.
Sense of humor.
That's yeah, there we
the
go.
Sorry, right. it's
I got
more,
it.
You
know,
yeah.
Yep.
You know, yeah. So, but yeah, so that was just crazy experience, and I couldn't wait to call my wife and, you know, fly back home to LA. That didn't seem right. So we end up, you know, very quickly moving to Milwaukee. We somehow get married, move out to LA, lose my job, and get a new job. We'd been married 6 weeks at that time, and we're on to our second state. And we just got a little condo in Milwaukee. And hey, we had a great time. The Euchers were so kind to us. Beth was pregnant with her first child my last year in Milwaukee. They had a baby shower for us.
Wow.
He and Judy. Mostly Judy.
Yeah.
And they were so kind to us. And we love the city of Milwaukee. As you know, I mean, yeah. Whenever we go there.
Yeah.
It's a sleeper city.
We have a great
time. It's a great city.
We have a great time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what really, and then I talk about, I have such great reverence for everybody I've worked with. Everybody teaches you something, you know. But working alongside Bob Euchre, one of the greatest entertainers who's ever lived.
Yeah.
Think of all the different things, mm-hmm. different types of things he's done. And just understanding in those 4 years, not to try to be somebody else or but learn my best self and what are my best things. You know, I don't need to rush or put on anything, you know, just kind of be myself, but be entertaining. I don't need to be just all nuts and bolts and, you know, that kind of thing. But however my personality suits, you know, and we ended up, I thought, you know, being good compliments, because obviously it's his show, you know, I mean, it's, but how can I augment him? But I was never treated like, okay, you're just here to help me out or be along for the ride. He always treated me like an equal, even though I knew I wasn't, but I felt like I was adding something to the broadcast. And so that made me feel great. And it was a really great experience. And Beth was a lot happier that we could actually get in a car and drive back to Pittsburgh. It was a long ride, but we could still do that. And it was a really great time.
Did you ever feel like you never walking on eggshells around him on the air?
I would say the first couple months, you're about to step on his show. He didn't make me feel that way, but it's inevitable.
Yeah, he's a legend.
This is my first really true big league job. I'm 33, you know, and he's Bob Euchre in his hometown. His nickname is Mr. Baseball. You know, his nickname.
That means something.
Yeah, it's not just Bob or Euchre. It's Mr. Baseball, you know.
Do you refer to him as that?
Yes. That's right. You know, if I can make eye contact with him, it would be, you know. No, he never made me feel like that.
That's
so
great.
So that was great. So at least, like, that barrier was always broken down. Yeah. But I was, of course, had a lot of trepidation. And then I remember we were in Arizona. It was early in the season. And it would always be me, him, and Kent Sommerfeld, the engineer, would have dinner. In the media dining, you know, Ken, of course, been around for almost 40 years now doing this. But that day, for some reason, Kent was doing something. So it was just Euchre and I sitting at the table. And it was like late April or something. And I said, Euchre, I said, is there any feedback you got for me? You know, and he said, yeah, loosen up.
How many years have you been at that point?
2 months.
2 months.
Yeah, but he was like, loosen up, you know, and I was like, he goes, you're too tight, you know, and I was like, okay, all right, and that really made me feel a lot better, and I go, I just don't want it, and he goes, relax, he goes, it's a baseball game, we're having fun, he goes, you're not gonna, you know, if I got something for you, I'll tell you, you know, but you're doing great, just keep it up, you know, and then Ken walked in, and that was the end of the conversation, and at that point, I felt like, well, I'm just going to be myself. And sure, I might have stepped on him a couple of times and I didn't quite say the right thing all the time, but that's fine. And he didn't get on me for it. It was okay. It's real life, you know?
And you're learning as you go.
Yeah. But it wasn't this big deal to him. And I just was able to relax, have fun. And I became better because I was relaxed, and he knew that. And I think that's why he kind of just, you know, led me that way. And from then on, it was really great. A lot of fun.
Joe, I know you thought about this. Obviously, legends, that word is thrown around way too much for me. But you truly work for the legend of the broadcast business, sports broadcast business. You worked maybe not necessarily right alongside, but certainly with Vin Scully, mm-hmm. doing Dodger talk.
I saw him every
right?
day, I mean, you know, for the home games at least, yeah.
So then you go and you work with, as you say, one of the greatest entertainers in the history of our country.
Yeah.
Certainly one of the great baseball personalities and truly a legend in Milwaukee. Then you work for an absolute legend in Pittsburgh with Steve Blass.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you. I was like, yeah.
Hey, he's in that legendary
category. Well, I was like, at least let Michael about, say that.
No, but how about that? That is...
No, yeah. No,
Scully,
but,
yeah. Euchre, yeah. Blass. That's quite a run.
And
think about how long they were around the same team.
Yeah,
that's what I think is so cool. Like you're on year nine. You're in triple decades.
Whatever,
it's special.
You know, and luckily I got to do games with Blass. You know, I got here soon enough.
Yeah,
but you know, you guys, and I know our audience is the same way. I don't care if you're 25, 5, or 125. You love baseball, and you love everything. You know, the history of the game, whether you lived it or not, and. So, just the stories with Steve, and he's so good at telling stories. And that's, you know, and I just wanted to tap into that. I was so eager from day one, you know, tell us about this or that or this. And he would, you know, very obliging with that stuff, whether it was on or off the air, you know. And so I was just a sponge working with him because... Sometimes I just forget we're on the air too. You know,
that means it's really good.
You know what I mean? Because you just get going, and I'm like, wow, that's wait, I just missed three pitches. You know, I wasn't even thinking about it, and so I can only imagine the audience how captivated they are. So I just treasure how I've been able to be around people because you played. Your athletic skill got you to be in that select group of people that have played Major League Baseball. When we're trying to do it, and I'm speaking for you, but you know, I never was going to be a professional player. So I'm on the outside looking in. The only way I'm going to get in is if I can ever announce games. And yes, it's an exclusive club because there's only so many jobs and that kind of thing. But like. You know, what right do I have to be with all these people who have played? It's a skill that's so difficult to achieve, you know. So I've always felt that way, that I've just been so fortunate to I'm just hanging out here. You played Major League Baseball. I think that's great. So Steve Blass, you know, he went all nine innings,
a lot, and twice in a World Series, one World Series.
Like, you know, we were talking about that earlier.
He's an awe factor for me because of what he's done in his storytelling. But I'll say the same thing about you guys. And what makes, I think, our family and our group different than a lot is that you guys are my teammates. I don't see you as a broadcaster. I see you as a teammate. I don't see you as someone that didn't play the game. I see you as a guy that I want to know, hey, what's your opinion? What's your thoughts? And you both have very strong opinions, and I love it. We'll debate, we'll talk, and we always come to a conclusion that, like, man, we really love this city. We really love this team. Yeah. And that's, in my opinion, the greatest gift Pittsburgh and the Pittsburgh audience has that, you know, I don't think everyone has. I've been a part of a bunch of different teams. I think I played for 11, and it's a special breed here. And I think it's funny. You married a girl from here. You end up here. Everybody we've had on this podcast has had a full circle event to bring them back to Pittsburgh. And it's because it's a special place, and it's because of the special people. And you two are two special people. And you guys have taught me a lot, and I've really enjoyed listening to all the stories because it is a grind. It is an absolute grind.
Well, Joe and I feel the same way about former players, but I have a special affinity to former Pirate players. I have great respect for they play one game for the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're in a special club for me.
Del Pozo or Danny Ortiz.
Yeah. Who was one of the 10 catchers that year?
Rod Barajas.
No, they played one game for the Pirates and parts of 2 years.
Wyatt
Torreyes.
What a great human being, too. He ended up working for the Pirates.
A little bit of scouting for the Pirates.
Absolutely.
Cole Figueroa.
Yeah.
You guys could go all day with
names. Recall
the now do the Korean baseball team.
It's a Pirate. I got it.
Hey, Brownie, now do the Korean baseball team.
Yeah. All right.
Maybe one of your first calls with the Dodgers.
Well, it was really weird, though, that seven of the nine in the lineup that day, their last name was Lee.
Good for you.
So I just I don't know. That was easy.
They were all related, of course.
Yeah.
very easy. Hey, so how did the pirate job come about? Because you were fine in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously I marry a woman from the South Hills. We got married in Scott Township, and we were about to have our first child. And, you know, we wanted to have her here, and we did. So now it's just we're locked in here. And our buddy Tim Neverett was doing the games here, but he grew up in New England. And so it was his dream to call games for the Boston Red Sox, and they had a job open, and they offered him the job, and he took it. So this was right before Christmas in 15 that I saw that the Pirates job has opened up. Well, we're here because we just had our daughter and we wanted to visit with family. And so wait a minute. So I called Mark Garda, who's our boss, you know, and said, "Hey, can I apply? I'm here if you want to interview me."
Right, it's like I'll Christmas. Be there in 10 minutes.
You know, it's like Christmas, you know. It's like so we had to get through the holidays, and then the process began. But I was able to request and get an interview, and so that was great. And I know Brownie, you were integral in giving your two cents, which carried a lot of weight, and luckily I had a lot of support from the guys. And that was cool to be in the division. You know, we had already had lunch and talked, and you know, once in a while, you know, if they wanted to come in and have a coffee or something, whatever. Bob Uecker had a big coffee chest of, I forget, it was Milwaukee coffee, I think.
Yeah. not this. Yeah, no. Not this coffee.
Yeah, not this coffee. No. Yeah. We've been enjoying here.
Great coffee. Yep.
How many hours have we been here? Not,
It's good coffee. Just good. It's good.
Decaf. Dude. Yeah, so, it opens up, and then I end up getting the job. We just stuck around town, too. We were going to go back to Milwaukee, and it's like, well, you know, you might need to interview. You might, you know, like, so we had all our
Once
stuff.
Once again, another sacrifice.
So we have all our stuff here, and I got a baby, you know, and we're just hanging out. And then it's like, oh, my gosh, this is really, really great. So I just go back to Milwaukee, pick up our stuff, and come on back and start a season. It's like, well, wait a minute. We get to live here forever. So, you know, my three kids all born here. We got married here. Wife grew up here.
What did Beth and the family think when you landed this job? Like,
well, this is a personal story, but I'll share it. So we talked earlier about when we started this episode about we're going out to L.A. So baseball season ended. We got married late October. And then a few days later, we're going to drive out to L.A. Newly, you know, just married a few days prior. And she's crying. She's on her childhood bed in her childhood room in her parents' house. And it's her dad consoling her. And I'm there. And like, we're going to leave at like 5 a.m. And, you know, it's and he's just like rubbing her back and saying it's going to be OK. She's scared. You know, it's like I just got married. We're going to move 3000 miles.
She was homesick. That's why she moved back.
That's why she had moved back to, you know, back from New Orleans to Pittsburgh to begin with. But she was going to do it because, you know, we're a team and we're going to go for it. You know, kind of thing.
Incredible.
But clearly it was a very difficult sacrifice for her. And I told her dad, I said, I'll bring her back in 4 years.
Come on.
I swear to God, I said that. And it was 4 years later, you know, add a month or so, you know, or whatever. And then we're back.
That's power in the spoken word right there.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah, it was unbelievable because that was 2011. And at the end of the 2015 season, you know, that I guess that's when it would have been. And then 2016 started with Pittsburgh Pirates.
I can imagine you saying to your father-in-law, "I told you."
Well, I told you. I did say that to him. I said, I told you. He started
You
laughing.
Need to like me more now. Yeah.
I could not believe it. I don't know what came
talk about. Talk about a backflip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Joe Brock mic drop.
But why did I say that, you know, in that moment? And it just, and it came true. I didn't know how or when or why I even said that. But it did come true. And I just thank God for that because that was the most powerful experience I've ever had.
That's incredible.
Career wise, obviously, is to be able to be here. And then, you know, we're here forever. It's great. So Yeah, we were talking about funeral plots the other, burial plots the other day. So we're like,
oh, that's nice. Way to bring it down again.
Too soon.
Yes.
Where do you want to go, Jefferson? Yeah, let's just do Jefferson.
Yeah, I got a couple extra plots. No big deal. Yeah.
So we're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Obviously, you're not going anywhere. Yeah. You've got that. You've
planned it. Until this thing. That's cool. Not, that's for sure.
I'm not leaving until the last cup of coffee is.
That's another pot.
That's right. We're pirates.
That's called rooted, bro.
These are beautiful.
That's rooted. That's rooted. That's a different way.
Michael, I didn't realize you knew engraving. This is beautiful. Yeah. This is really nice.
It's my Viking background.
McHenry's really good at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any similarities that you see between Uke and Blass, besides the obvious great sense of humor?
I'd love to hear them.
But they're different people, I'm sure, on the air. Uecker seems to me to be, well, first of all, he's a play-by-play guy. Blass never was. That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And so Blass had that platform.
The comedy and making people laugh.
Oh, my gosh.
Enjoying yourself and just
enjoying life and baseball.
Yes, don't take it too seriously. Yeah. So I was privy to and enjoyed, and you would love this, to have been a fly on the wall. So you were talking before about when we started the previous episode about Ernie Harwell would come in and talk to you or whatever. You know, that's a common thing. Broadcast would come in. We'll have a little chat with the opposing team, be friendly. And so Blass would always come in and talk to Uecker. But Blass is armed with a joke. Or two or three or four. You know, he's always
ready.
Still to
he's
today.
Got a new one.
He called me this winter. I'm sure he does. Yeah. He called me this winter just to tell me a joke.
Yeah.
He didn't say anything other than the joke. And that was the end of the conversation. Hang up. And that's that. And I was like, that was a good joke.
That was great.
It was a good joke. I laughed. It was very heartily. Yeah. But that's what he'd do. He'd come in and he'd test a few out on Uecker and he'd land two or three and Uecker would give him something back and then they'd go. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is great. This is, you know, this is
that's
like
classic.
Yeah, this is people Connor's would pay, Macro,
people know, would pay is, top dollar right. to be sitting there watching these two exchange jokes.
100%.
It was great. And it wasn't a one-upping thing. It was just like, hey, it's 4:30 on a Wednesday, and
I got one you can use.
Let's have fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's enjoy our life right at this second and just make each other laugh. And it was wonderful to see.
That's incredible.
So that's the similarities that come to mind right away.
Now, how about working with all these different personalities? So basically in Milwaukee, you're pretty much just you and Uke, right?
Yeah, and now, then my last year I worked with Jeff Levering,
Okay, who's a play-by-play guy.
Yeah.
But now we've got this, including the guy next to you, all these different personalities. Is that fun for you or challenge?
I'm curious. I am a curious person.
Yeah.
And so getting to know your personality, what are your strengths? What are things you like to stay away from? In your career, you're a catcher. What are you proud of? What are the things that... it's all said and done now. What did you really feel proud about in your career? Let's kind of get to those things sometimes. Not as a boastful thing, but if you achieve something like that, to be able to play Major League Baseball, that's a huge accomplishment. So, all right, and then the audience wants to know about that. And then what are some stories? A lot of times we ask questions of our analysts, didn't go anywhere. We don't know. Okay, we'll try that. Nothing. But sometimes, you really tap into something and the audience benefits because they hear a great adage or some insight that, and then we learn too. We
right, 100%.
Too. It's like, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Because you were behind the plate, and you saw that cutter just, late movement on a Melanson cutter or whatever. It's like, what is late movement? And like, what do you really mean by that? Holy crap. You can't perceive it. You can't see it. From the hitter cannot see it. I can see it because I'm behind the plate, but the hitter can't see it. What? And I never think, you don't think of that kind of stuff.
Well done with the cutter, by the way.
Yeah, well done. I see that
old,
plug.
Hold my cutter. Yeah,
hold my cutter. And
sometimes that's the name of the
podcast.
He just did that for us. Thank you.
It's the cutter of the cigars and the cutter of the pitch.
Yeah. So I don't normally... Yes. You guys probably don't know this about me, but I just spoke recently and I said the one regret I have in my career is I didn't enjoy the moment. I didn't embrace what was happening. And because of you guys and because of some of the cool questions and because of just the entertainment factor of it all, I've been able to kind of reflect. And I've gone back and I don't like writing. I'm not good at writing. And I've written things of what I remember. And it's been remarkable. I've been able to touch lives because of it. Whether it's a really cool moment or someone that's come up to me like, hey, do you remember this moment during this game? I was with my dad and that's why I'm a Pirates fan. It's been mind blowing because I didn't think it really mattered in the moment. I'm trying to think about the next thing. We get so focused on that, but you guys have unlocked a part of me that I didn't know existed. And wow. I have to say thank you because I've looked into it in that way, but I've always been a catcher and I'm always looking at it as like, how can I make my teammate better? Mm-hmm. But then I'm seeing it from vice versa. That's all you guys are really trying to do. So it's a perfect combo for me to learn and grow. And I've learned so much from you guys just seeing how you kind of play those different personalities because I enjoy you guys for different reasons, for the same reasons, and it's been a joy. And I don't think if you're not in this game, maybe you don't realize how good it is, but it's incredible.
Well, I also think it goes back to what we were saying earlier. And it's not luck, because I think the Pirates and Mark Garda and the people at the radio station and Sportsnet Pittsburgh, it's intentional that you get not only good analysts, but good people who like each other. Because I think that's people have asked me about what makes a good broadcast, and it's the technical stuff. You got to get it right. We've talked to others about that, how you present a broadcast and your styles and so on. But I grew up listening to guys like Harry Callis and Richie Ashburn of the Philadelphia Phillies. They were a team for decades, and people would tune into the games, yes, to listen to the Phillies, but some bad Philly teams, but they just loved hearing two buddies talk about the game of baseball. They were sitting down with them, and that's what I think has been created with, again, it was Blass and Walk full time for about that. Then Wehner starts joining the team on the road, and then when Blass retires, they start bringing McHenry, they bring Caps, Kevin Young, now Neil Walker, and boy, that's hard to do when you get all these guys, that combination that's like each other and have fun on the air, you know, and everybody offers something different and unique.
Amen. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. You know, and I was trying to think of an analogy here. So you ever go out and have, like, let's say there's a dinner party and you're with another couple, and you can tell they don't like each other, you know, and they're gritting teeth and they're throwing barbs at each other. How much fun are you having? And then you go out with another couple, and they are into each other, and they're into what you're saying. They're laughing, and you're laughing, and there's good energy. I liken it to that, because it's like,
well said.
If you and I are sitting there, and we're gritting our teeth at each other, like, just get me through this inning, you know, it's going to show. It's gonna carry over the air, and no one's going to have a good time. And what's the point, you know?
And there are teams, by the way, that we won't... Not necessary to name names, but I know them, you know them, who are like that.
You can hear it.
No, it's
you can hear it.
Yeah, yeah. There's some.
I mean, there's a reason. I mean, obviously, especially myself and Matt Capps, we played other places, and there's reasons why Pittsburgh was the lo and behold place we both wanted to come back to because it felt like home. I mean, I was drawn here. I was like, yeah, Pittsburgh. That's my second place. That's my home.
Yeah.
And I live here now.
Yeah. But that's the other thing that's cool.
That's common
about the Pirates. And, and you would know better than I because this, you know, the Pirates are it for me. I don't know that anybody else has this. Again, going back to anybody that's ever played even a game for the Pittsburgh Pirates, near and dear to our hearts. But think about the guys, despite the losing, the guys that still love the Pittsburgh Pirates, that would do anything to that when they come back, they love going to the games, seeing what things are like now at PNC Park. Jack Wilson, but all the guys that come back, Craig Wilson.
Burnett, yeah.
AJ Burnett, name them. All of them, even if they played a short time, there's a true love for the Pittsburgh Pirates from all these former Pirate players.
Yeah, AJ is a great example because he's so accomplished and played a lot of places and had, you know, great team success in other places too. Still, you know, really identifies with the Pirates.
Yeah, I saw something the other day. He wrote, and we keep in touch. He said, "It's my Gotham.
Yeah,
it's his second home." And that's the feeling he has. And I always go back to a Roberto Clemente quote is, "It captured my heart. I was born somewhere else, but this became my home."
Yeah.
And that's how I feel. And I know a lot of guys feel that way.
Yeah, and we do. I mean,
obviously you guys
do. No one's trying to pretend that we grew up here, but I think it means something when somebody is not from here, and then they want to live here. And
exactly.
They, you know, and you live here year round. I mean, you know, it's like
I made
a lot of ex-players don't live in the north.
Yeah. I left the hottest place in the world in Tennessee. People are moving there. I mean, our house sold for incredible amount of money because of how hot it was. And I moved to Pittsburgh. And I mean, this is a God thing. Yeah. I literally moved from one place to the other in the exact same price house in the perfect location at the perfect timing. It was remarkable. Just kind of like what you said. It's just like, this is where we're supposed to be.
Great place, great team. Mm-hmm. We're very lucky.
Michael was curious before we even started recording this about your preparation.
Mm-hmm. I was. Heard you're deep into your preparation. I've seen it.
I just had a colonoscopy this week.
Not that prep.
We're
talking about that.
That's too deep. Yes.
Okay. I'm like, I mean, I saw the cameras. I got a little nervous.
Well done, by the way.
Yeah, that was well done.
Well done.
Being a guy.
Dramatic pause.
When I retired, people often ask, what do you miss the most? And I say, I miss the offseason, the grind, the willingness to try to get better just by this much. And you guys have two completely different styles. You're very technical. You've built a website. You even wrote some of your own code to get some of the things you need during the game. Brownie's got the old school look, and it's kind of remarkable. He's like Rain Man flipping the pages to get to the thing he needs. It's so cool to me. It's been the coolest part of this job is watching you guys prepare for me. Honestly, like, I love it. And I want you to share a little bit of how you go about it. You come up with some of the coolest stats. You still send me the emails, you know, just about every series, and it's neat. And the same thing with Brownie. Brownie sends something completely different, but you combine the stats, the stories, the anchoring that you've learned, and you kind of put it all in one. Just talk about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, I was saying earlier, but I'm just curious. You know, I think that's where that lies for me.
Curiosity.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, you know, the Pirates sign a player, bring him to minor leagues or spring training, or trade for a guy, and I don't know him all that well or whatever. I just, well, let me think about this. Let me look into this. I'd like to know about this, and what's this? I thought I heard something about this before. Let me, you know, but then you talk to the player, you know, and I like to talk to the opposing players as well, cross-reference sometimes, ask them about the Pirates players, and get a feel for maybe what they think. And maybe that doesn't come out on the air. I don't say, you know, I talked to Joey Votto about Carlos Santana's defensive ability or something, you know, but and I just bring that up as an example, but I might, or, you know, what's it like to face, you know, a Pirates pitcher, for instance, or things like that. So that kind of stuff leaks in, and as you know, when you do that, or if you, let's say you find a statistic, whatever. Well, sometimes stats can lie to you, but I try to, again, cross-reference or validate it by asking the player, you know, hey, I've noticed this in, you know, a stat. Or I won't even bring up the stat. I'll say, you know, what's your there's a Pirate player in recent times who would take a lot of pitches right down the chute. Hmm. And I said, well, what's your approach with two strikes, you know, and things like that, you know. And I noticed that, wow, he's taking a lot of third strikes, you know, a big power type hitter too, and I was surprised by that. So, you know, and but I want to know, like, okay, well, so he's looking to walk. Okay, so, you know, I can't be in a big situation. You need a big hit. You need a double. You need a home run right here to win the game. I'm not going to kind of set us up for that, because he's probably not going to do that. He's going to draw a walk and set up the next guy, you know, the middle infielder is coming up next to Button. You know, so, but that's the kind of insight that I hope benefits the audience, because when we are talking to guys, and you're always, you know, down there and talking to everybody, and or if we're looking up stats, or if we're looking through, you know, someone wrote a feature piece on a guy, you know, we're trying to glue all that together and bring you the picture. And, you know, we don't always get fully right, but we're trying to be fair, and we're trying to get into, you know, the players' heads a little bit, set it up, and then and amalgamate that for the audience. So that's kind of what I do, is I go from a bunch of different sources, try to squeeze it into, like you said, you know, sometimes I have a little you know, cheat sheet for the day or whatever on my little OneNote or whatever, and then that's what I'm going off of. And but a lot of it's in here from the day, and then, you know, almost none of it is relevant for that particular game.
As you know, he's one of the smartest guys in the world.
Yeah, no,
I'm not. I have to prepare so that it sounds like I am.
He's very, very intelligent.
That's why I have to prepare so much.
Yeah, and it's a very, very jealous of that intellect. He's a sharp cookie, and got a great, great
cookies
sense of humor.
Sharp. You notice that?
Yeah.
They're very round.
That's good.
I've had
he's
some really
a,
sharp
round
cookies
cookie.
In my day.
That's true. I've thought about that that way. Yeah. To say it. I wanted to ask you about your website. You mentioned that Call the Game that you founded.
Yeah, it's been going on for a long time, though.
But what was the purpose of that?
Okay, so me and this guy, Jim Toko. Jim Toko worked in Charleston, South Carolina the year before me, calling pre and post game. And then he got a job doing the games in Charleston, West Virginia. Hmm. So he's in Charlie West, I'm in Charlie South, and we stayed in touch. He left me a beer in the fridge and said, go get him. And I like this guy. I don't know him, but I like this guy. I don't know who he is. So, but we got in touch. And then at the end of that first season in 2000 in Charleston, I drove up to the other Charleston and met him. And we went to Shoney's and had a few pops. Shoney's. And that's all I could afford. I ate liver and onions that day. I remember that. It was the cheapest thing on the
first
menu.
Time?
Oh, no.
Big liver and onion guy?
Grew up being that stuff. It's cheap,
I love it.
That's why.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
So, yeah. So he had the idea, really, to do this. I kind of, I thought about it, but he had really fleshed it out nicely. He had most of the design. I just kind of thought about it, sort of. And so we married our ideas, and we put it to work. And so for, I don't know, about 7 years, we had a website that if a team, it could be like a CBA team, or, you know, G League nowadays, I guess, or it could be like a Major League, you know, NFL team, or whatever, it could be anything. If you got a play-by-play job open, we're all ears. Let us know. We'll post it on there for you. We had a message board that I thought that people in time kind of grew to know about and participated. And we manicured it pretty well. So we tried to keep it like this is a professional place to be. You know, if you're crazy, getting after people and being real negative, and then this is before social media. So, yeah. So there was some of that, and we curtailed that, and we got it out of there. So it ended up being a pretty okay place to gather. And then we kind of expanded into we'd interview, prominent people in the business. Hey, Ian Eagle, Aaron Andrews, whatever, how did you get here? And that kind of thing. And it was cool because, we're working games in the minor leagues. We're just naturally excited to talk with these people. And I couldn't believe, I just reach out to people, strangers, so accommodating and, genuinely wanted help. And so many times they say, well, hey, you keep in touch with me and let me know how you're doing. So I ended up, and it really wasn't the aim, but I ended up, and Jim did too, expanding our own networks and getting opportunities for ourselves because of that website. And that was really never the aim. It was really to just further the industry. Our big thing was when I got into the business, you had back in those days, again, the internet's still really limited. You had to fly out to wherever the winter meetings were. And my year was 99 in Anaheim, and I'm living in Michigan. You got to get a plane ticket. You got to get a hotel for 3 days. You got to, buy at least, one suit, and three different shirts and three different ties. And, interview with all these people and then fly back and then cross your fingers that hope somebody calls you. And I say, there got to be a better way than this. So, the internet's really starting to come up in the early 2000s. And so that's where we're like, hey, look, no, all the jobs are right here. We'll put them on our website. It's all free. Everything was free.
How'd you make money?
Well, we sold ads, but it wasn't like, you know, this massage parlor or something, you know, or whatever. It was like
legit stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It was like Bob Carpenter's scorebook.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Ours, yeah.
You know, like Bob Carpenter. And then I got to know Bob Carpenter. Yeah. It was great. You know, it's like, oh, what an awesome guy. And he gives us a few bucks and we sell a whole bunch of his scorebooks for him. It was, you know, because it's a, what a dedicated audience this is. You know? So that kind of stuff, you know, and we talk to young guys all the time. Hey, you know, gals, guys, you want to get started in this business, you got to work hard, you got to be relentless, the whole bit. I was very fortunate that I met somebody that had a similar kind of dream, and it was right at the right time. It was just that the internet really started to take off, so there wasn't this anywhere, or at least then it wasn't good anywhere, or I didn't know of it. So we were able to do that. Now in 2024, you can't, you know, come up with things on the internet. Everything's been done probably. So, but there are always ways to figure out something that's a little bit different or maybe unique and can, you know, get you separated from the pack, I guess. And inadvertently, that was for us.
Does Joe Block have a favorite pirate moment right away that comes out to your mind? Favorite call?
So,
and least favorite?
Yeah. So, okay, favorite call.
Least favorite.
Now, I've only done 8 seasons. The comeback game, September 23rd of 23. You know, you're down 9-0 in the third inning. I'm working with Rock, John Wehner, and it's 9-3. It's the sixth inning. And Rock says, you know, if Reynolds pops one right here, this is 9-6. And you know, they're going to win this game, you know. And I was like, I started getting chills. I'm like, yeah. I was like, kind of like, yeah, they're gonna win this game tonight. He's got to hit one out though, you know. And then like a couple pitches later, he hits one out. Now it's 9-6 in the sixth, and so we're just, you know, it's the end of the season. They're not gonna make the playoffs. They've had a better year. They're not gonna make the playoffs. But so this is gonna be kind of a big moment in this particular season. And so we're just like, all right, well, let's just go for it. We're gonna just say they're gonna win this game, and we just kept. They're gonna win tonight, and they're gonna win, and it's gonna be the greatest comeback. And you know, and here they come, you know, and they did. They came back, and it was by the, you know.
Bonkers.
Oh, I did. I started crying.
It was unbelievable. You went bonkers. It was so good.
The Pirates are good again.
Yeah.
I watched it. That's the only moment I watched.
If you have not seen it, and you're watching this right now, you got to go back and find it.
I watched games. I watched, like, bits
and pieces. We're going to put it in.
I go, the Pirates are good again. I started crying. I was like, it's just so great. Because it's just like, we're talking in the previous episode about, I grew up a Detroit Lions fan. I'm still a big Detroit Lions fan. And it mirrors a little bit of the Pirates fan plight, right? And you're like, oh my God, if we could just, come on. We got a bunch of young players. Sky's the limit, right? Can we just be good? And it was just like that glimmer of hope. Because it was like Majinski's got to come on, you know, he's got to come on and get the save, and he nails it down, you know, by a single run, runner at third, you know, but he does it.
Yeah.
And it was just like 12-11 final. They come back from 9 runs down. You know, how easy could it have been? He throws a wild pitch, game's tied, they lose in extra innings, and you know, you just go, well, he's young, you know. You know.
And what a moment for him.
But he got over the hump, you know, and this team got over the hump. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I hope it's a precursor to 24 being a great year. And I hope that everybody enjoyed that half as much as we did, because it was such a great time to be a Pirate. I said that night too, because it was.
Yeah, it was really incredible.
Yeah,
it was incredible.
We'll save the worst moment for a later episode, because that's too good a finish.
Yes, that was a great finish.
Because there are no worst moments, no bad moments.
Yes, sir.
None.
Here, give me
it's all ball. Been good. It's all been great.
Been great.
What is Joe that? Block, who is as sharp as a knife.
Sharp as a...
He's one sharp knife.
Sharp as a rubber ball.
I won't say sharp cookie again. Only Joe thinks about cookie being round.
And it crumbled.
Yeah.
You're sharp,
anyway, thanks.
You're sharp
thank
knife.
You.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Another toast.
So, you want, yes. I want another coffee.
Another toast? Another coffee?
Decaf after hours.
Another episode of Hold My Cutter.